Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We go where we want to, do what we like to do. We only time to get restless. There's always something new.
And that's right. We are the Monkees. This is Scared Monkees Radio. Of course, our webpage is www.scaredmonkees.com/radio. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up on the podcast. You can listen to daily commentaries or shows from the past. We're also on Channel 46 on Trust Cable in Alabama, satellite virtual channel W3957, and wherever else you can pick us up, welcome. It's always nice to have you. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Tonight, former Secret Service agent and now private investigator Art Wood will be here. He and I are going to talk about the Natalie Holloway investigation. There is a big show on tonight on Court TV called Haunting Evidence. Now, haunting evidence, will that bring evidence to help solve this case? Art Wood and I are going to talk about that a little bit later on. Also, Ron McKinnon, there was a recent New Jersey Supreme Court ruling where Ron McKinnon is trying to prevent his ex from relocating to Japan with their daughter. He's afraid that she will abduct that child. We're going to continue on with our set of interviews that deals with the country of Japan and how it is a safe haven for parents who try to or successfully abduct their children. Then Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch will be here. He and his group are in Canton, Ohio, searching for that 9-month pregnant gal, Jessie Davis. It's a bizarre and sad case for sure. It's good to see the Texas Equisearch is in Ohio trying to help with that case. That's tonight here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkees Radio. It's great to have you. We'll be back in just a minute with Art Wood. Okay, we're back. I do have a programming update for you. After, or at the end of the show, I have been in contact with Attorney J. Paul Derritani. He represents the Duckett family. Do you remember the Melinda Duckett case and the Nancy Grace lawsuit? Well, J. Paul Derritani, who's been on my show many times, will join us at 10 o'clock Eastern and give us an update as far as the lawsuit against Nancy Grace and the disappearance of Trenton Duckett. So we're looking forward to that. Tonight on Court TV, there is a show called Haunting Evidence. There's a psychic that has gone to Aruba that is going to, let's just see here, Haunting Evidence will air a segment on the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. We hope that there is a substance to the show. all this sort of stuff. You know, we've talked so much about the Holloway investigation. We've seen so many leads that have turned sour. We've seen so much corruption. We've seen so much disappointment. I've seen Dave Holloway and Beth and the families, the looks on their faces and the distress that they're going through. It just makes me so damn angry sometimes that we can't get this thing figured out. I thought I'd bring on someone tonight that's very close to this case, Art Wood, former Secret Service agent, private investigator, to talk about the case, obviously, and do programs like this Haunting Evidence actually help, or is it just a hype and a bunch of false hope? Hi, Art, how are you?
I'm good, Dana.
Nice to have you back on the show again.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to participate.
You know, we're a couple of old cops. We do things, police work 101. We start at the beginning, we end up at the end. I, in my 25 years, have never worked with a psychic, and I've done murder investigations and rapes and disappearances and all sorts of things. Of course, we know that psychics are prevalent out there, and maybe there is some substance to what they do, but it's a head-scratcher for me when these types of shows come out, yet they go nowhere. It almost seems like maybe it's a little strong for me to say publicity stunt, but I try to feel for the family a little bit. I'm sure they think that any exposure is good exposure, but really, is it, Art?
Well, you know what? I try to approach this with an open mind. I've never been involved in a successful culmination of a case that involved a psychic. However, you know, I've met so many psychics on the Natalie Holloway case, and quite frankly, in most cases, I was impressed with their sincerity, and they may be in touch with the situation that is way beyond our police experience.
And
what I mean?
Yeah, maybe, Art, we're just getting to be too damn old, and we like to deal with, like the late Jack Webb used to say, just the facts.
Well, you know what? I always thought that these cases, like, you know, 99, you know, and I know that 99% of these cases are solved by interviews.
Right.
And, you know, he said, she said, and the truth. But honestly, I have, in my experience with the Natalie Holloway case, I have met so many people, some of which claim to be, have psychic powers, and I have come away with a whole different feeling towards it. I am much more open-minded than I ever was, and I don't have a clue what's going to be on Court TV tonight or which psychic or anything like that. I do know that I have a great deal of respect for some of the spiritual people that I have met in this case. And beyond that, that's about as far as I'm willing to go with the psychic situation. I do know that early on in the case that I think that the Twitties and the Holloways had a full plate and kind of were overwhelmed with some of the psychic people that claimed to have information, and some of that was purposely sent my way just to weed it out, and I learned a lot.
Yeah, and you know, and you're right too. And good intentions, I'm sure, with everyone, and I don't give a damn if it's a magician who pulls a rabbit out of his hat. If it leads to a conclusion in this case and it brings that young girl home to Alabama where she belongs, then let's do it. It bothers
Dana,
me.
Dana, listen, I do want to bring some information to you.
Sure.
Just to give you a little bit of an update, and that is that on a every few days I'm in touch with some people in Aruba, including Jossie Mansour, the editor of the Diario.
Yep.
And Dave Holloway and I talk frequently. And I can tell you that the family is encouraged by the action of the Dutch investigators, the actions that appear to be going on. The sincerity of the Dutch investigation has struck home to Dave and Robin, and they're, you know, they want to give them every chance to uncover new leads or to follow up on leads that should have been followed up on. And I know from talking with Dave frequently that, you know, we're holding our breath, hoping that, that they do find information. But, you know, it's he's probably communicated more with the prosecutor since the new since the Dutch had come in on this than he ever did with Karen Jensen. So all I can say is I think that it's encouraging, and you know, I'm not going to suggest that they're close to breaking this case open or anything, but I know that Dave is encouraged. At least he thinks that they're sincere.
And you know,
to
that,
me, that's a big deal.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Because really, was that sincerity there before? No, it certainly wasn't. In fact, these poor people ran into more roadblocks, and I'm sure you were there. You did also. So maybe that's why there's such an impatience. I'm going to use that term. With both the media, the people involved, those that care, those that want to see answers, that, you know, obviously some homicide investigations take years and years and years.
Although some of them are never solved, and some of them are solved by accident.
Exactly.
And in this case, what we're only thing we're encouraged about is that we have bona fide investigators from Holland that are actively working the case. And I'm being told by Jossie that these people are working hard. And if that's the case, I always felt that it, and you and I have discussed this, I have gone on your show over a year ago and said, listen, it would only take a solid investigation and I think the case could be solved. So, you know, I'm very encouraged by that.
Let's talk about the he said, she said aspect of this. Basically, some people will say, use the term one person ratting on another term, whatever you, or on another person, whatever you want to call it. That is a big part of bringing a conclusion to this. Where do you see that going, Art? Is there that possibility, not necessarily with the three boys, but with someone else?
Well, I think there is a possibility with three boys.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you a little something that happened that I got a call from Aruba several months ago. Jeroen Vandersloot was on a radio show, and he was blaming the Calpo brothers for this. So, you know, when you hear one of the co-defendants, or co-suspects, I should say, they're not defendants,
right,
on a radio show blaming you, there could be ramifications to that. But I always said, and I continue to maintain, that there are more than three people that know what happened to Natalie. And when I think there's at least five, maybe seven or eight. And if that's the case, somebody could and should talk. And that's, you know, the only way this case is going to be solved is if somebody talks.
When I had David Koch on, the attorney for the Calpo brothers, I asked him just that question. I said, if there was an opportunity for your clients to be reclassified rather than suspects as witnesses, would you consider that? And he wouldn't rule it out, but after I asked that question, he's never returned a phone call or an email to me and won't come back on my show. So I think he thinks that I tricked him into answering that question, and well, actually I did. But there is that possibility that there are others out there, other people that may have seen something, heard something. You don't necessarily have to see something to be a witness, do you?
No, you know, you could read it in an email. You could overhear a conversation. Quite frankly, you could find a piece of paper or a piece of fabric or anything that you didn't know what it meant at the time and later discovered what it meant. That's how cases are solved. It's a matter of somebody that's afraid to come forward that might change their mind after they think about it for a year or two, and they do. It happens all the time. Quite frankly, you know, in police work, it doesn't happen as frequently as we would like, but it does happen. And people turn up with the dangest information sometimes.
Has there been a change in the cooperation of the Aruban government?
I don't know that there has been, Dana. Quite frankly, I think that the politics are as usual down there. I mean, I can tell from talking to Jossie that things seem to be the same as far as the corruption in that government. However, I think that that the Dutch are not part of that, and that they're not sharing this investigation with the Arubans any more than they have to.
Van der Sloot,
I get the impression, and I'm not there, okay? But I get the impression that the Dutch are taking a very secretive, close-to-the-vest approach and not sharing this with certain investigators that worked the Holloway case in the past.
Van der Sloot wrote a book. Last time I had Jossie on, I think old issues of the National Enquirer were outselling it. I said that I had a place in my birdcage here at home for it. I got a few funny emails about that one. Do sometimes suspects like this, let's look at the O.J. book, for example. Of course, he says that that's a fiction book, but he's basically confessing to his crime. I haven't read the Van der Sloot book. I'm not sure if you have or you've seen anything of it.
I wouldn't even know what the name of it is or any excerpts from it. I did hear about it.
Is there a possibility, and maybe others can straighten me out on this, that he has answered a lot of these questions in this book? Because that kid, the sociopath that I'm calling him, has an arrogance about him that he is untouchable. And I don't know if that's come from his parents, from his attorneys, or what. But I'm wondering if all aspects are being looked at, including this dopey book he wrote.
But I don't know. Quite frankly, that's good. That's a very good question, and it's something that I probably should have explored sooner. But I haven't heard any fireworks about this book whatsoever. I knew that he had written a book, but I don't know that it's out yet.
Oh, it's out. No, nobody's buying it, according to Jossie. It's just collecting dust on the shelves, but it is out.
All right, well, I will. That's one of the things I will ask Jossie about and see if I can find somebody that's got a copy of it. I would love to at least explore that to make sure there's something that he didn't put in there that comes back to haunt him.
Have you heard, Art, about the forensics? We've seen the searches at the Van der Sloot residence by the Dutch, and they went over and did some, well, anything from cell phone pings at the Kelpos to whatever. I agree that it's smart for the Dutch to keep this close to the vest, to keep it somewhat quiet, but have you heard anything as far as what they're looking at?
He's tried to talk to these people, and we're not aware of any positive developments in forensics whatsoever. And then that doesn't surprise me either, because I had serious doubts that they would find anything forensic-wise at that Van der Sloot residence. But I'm encouraged by the fact that they took the opportunity to do it.
2 years later, or over 2 years later, Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch is talking about returning to do a deep water search. We all hope that that is successful, that Natalie or the remains of Natalie are found in a crab trap or whatever. But let's talk a little bit about those forensics and the evidentiary value. Yes, through DNA they would be able to determine who it is in that crab trap, but is there any possibility of any sort of evidentiary value as far as tying it into a suspect?
Well, there's always a slim possibility, like there could be a skull fracture or a bullet hole or something in it. And any, you know what I mean, and that may lead to the solving of a crime. But in this particular instance, I have my doubts as to whether there would be any evidentiary value other than if the remains were found in that crab trap, you know, then that would verify some of the investigative leads that we came up with early on. But, you know, I would think that, you know, it's been 2 years.
Right.
And the ocean is not kind to the remains in 2 years. I mean, it's it would be beyond our imagination to find very many answers.
If you're just tuning in, former Secret Service agent and current private investigator Art Wood joins me, and we're talking about the Natalie Holloway investigation. Art, one of the theories that was floated around a while ago, and we talked about it here on my show, also was the fact that Natalie may have died accidentally, that these boys would be complicit, but there was no intent to kill at the beginning. Let's deal with that now and put it to rest, or say that there is a possibility to it.
Well, Daniel, listen, that was always a possibility early on. I mean, even Dave Holloway, he went to Paulus and suggested that if your son was involved in an accident involving my daughter, that he should come forward and let us find out the truth. You know, that was always something that I felt could have happened. However, the complicity of these guys, it went beyond just an accidental death or injury. It's because of the fact that they possibly supplied this girl with alcohol and drugs, you know, to take advantage of her, and that would certainly make it extremely, you know, it would change it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that has been discussed many times, Art, is the fact that there hasn't been a lot of talk as far as these boys being minors with alcohol. The fact that they admit, there's been several confessions. Some have been seen, some haven't. Some have been changed, and lies and all this sort of stuff, that they took advantage of Natalie in a stuporous condition. There's, you know, sexual assault allegations. But that's all been basically put aside on the back burner. Again, 2 years later, it's hard, if you're a defendant or a suspect, to come forward and say, well, gee, you know, it was just an accident. Why have you been hiding it for so long then? What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. I think that if these guys are eventually charged, they're going to have a hard time saying it was an accident. You don't wait 2 years and say, I didn't want to come forward because it was an accident, and I was afraid of, you know, of this, that, or the other thing. I think they had that opportunity early on to show that it was an accident. I mean, let's face it, if you would tell your kids, I would tell mine, if they were involved in an accident, to take the person to a hospital.
Yep.
And no matter what they thought, that would be the reaction that I would expect. And unfortunately, these kids turned somewhere else, and somebody led them on down a different path. And some people believe that that person was Paulus Vandersloot. I couldn't tell you who it was. But somebody helped these kids out of this situation. And I don't believe these kids were old enough, savvy enough, or intelligent enough to get rid of Natalie's remains without help. So somebody else is involved.
Let's talk about that. We've heard about Paulus and Joran and Deepak and Satish Kelpo. There are some other names out there that I know I'd like to have in an interrogation room for even a half an hour to see what they have to say. Let's talk about some of those names, Art.
Go ahead. I mean, you can shoot any name you want at me. Dennis Jacobs is the lead investigator, who I've always felt that did a very unprofessional investigation, and that seems to have led the case away from ever being solved. Jan van der Straten was the chief of police at the time and seems to be Paulus' best friend. And there's some real answers, some real questions about his involvement in this case. Those would be the two main characters, as far as I'm concerned, as to complicity in covering this up. You know, there was always some other friends of the kids that could have been involved, but those were the main characters as far as I'm concerned.
If you had a chance to be in an interrogation room with one suspect right now, and you were given 3 hours, okay, Art, here you go, here's your chance, which one of them would you have in that room with you?
Well, if I had a chance to interview anybody in this case in an attempt to solve the case, it would be Kuhn Gottenboss, Jeroen Vandersloot's friend. Kuhn Gottenboss is a young man that is no longer in Holland. He's living in, he's no longer in Aruba. He's living in Holland with his family. He has moved to the United States. He is the person that I believe supplied the boat for them to use. I think that he knows what happened to Natalie. I think that that Kuhn was very, very afraid of what of the authorities of being interviewed in this case. I mean, I can tell you that his father has gone to great lengths to keep him from being interviewed by the investigators. And Dave Holloway and I begged the chief of police to have him interviewed, and it didn't happen.
Would there be any possibility of the Dutch investigators speaking to him, or maybe they have?
We have made it very clear to them that we believe that he is possible key to solving this case. And you know, as I said, they're very secretive
right.
about what they do. So I don't know if they've taken that to heart or if that's something that we can expect to happen in the future. I certainly hope so. You know, all I can do is continue to. I wouldn't mention it on your radio show, except that I feel strongly that he could be the key to solving this case, and I hope that just bringing that up doesn't interfere with anything they want to do. But I know from a professional standpoint and from a personal experience of being there with Dave Holloway that this kid was petrified. He was scared to death. And we begged the police to pull him in, and it didn't happen.
Has there been any sort of timeline, Art, or again, are they keeping that quiet? Again, it's easy for us to speculate right now, but has there been any sort of timeline that's been passed on to you or the family?
not that I'm aware of. I mean, nobody, not Jossie, not Dave Holloway, not the prosecutor's office. Nobody has given us any indication or has any. You know, any information that they've shared regarding a timeline as to how long the Dutch are going to continue this investigation, et cetera. However, you know, just the fact that they've got professional people on it and that they're looking over stuff that we felt was shoddy, done wrong, you know, wasn't accomplished early on, that maybe they're going to do a thorough professional investigation, that I welcome that.
And we all do, that's for sure. Art, thank you for spending some time with me again this evening.
It's a pleasure, and everybody be safe.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. That's Art Wood, former Secret Service agent and private investigator, updating us on the Holloway investigation. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio with Ronald McKinnon.
Sentimental me. waiting for the moon and wishing for a star. Darling, can't you see?
And just to remind you, you are listening to the Dana Pritzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We do have a programming or a guest edition. Attorney J. Paul Dertani will join me at 10 o'clock Eastern or just a little before to give us an update on the Duckett case. That's where Nancy Grace and CNN are being sued. Remember that? Well, the attorney for the Duckett family will be here. We'll be right back in a minute here on the Dana Pritzer Show.
Well, how many people can stand up and say they had enough of rock and roll music today? If you didn't come to boogie, you didn't come to ball, you got no business being here at all. Well, it's gonna be one of those nights. It's just got to be one of those nights. Hey, people, I'm gonna give you warning. We're all going to jail in the morning. Grab somebody and hold on tight. It's gonna be one of those nights. Well, we just flew in for a one-night stand.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pritzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. In my continuing series of reports on families or parents who have had children abducted and taken to Japan, and the fact that the Japanese government is doing nothing, that their country is a safe haven for parents who take their children and abduct them there, I'm bringing on Ron McKinnon. There was a recent New Jersey Supreme Court ruling concerning him trying to prevent his ex from relocating to Japan with their daughter. He's afraid of her kidnapping or abducting their daughter to Japan. And we thought we'd bring Ron on to talk a little bit about that case. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how you doing, Dana? I just like to say real quick, thank you very much for your concern with this issue. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, that's no problem. And we've done several shows on this topic with people from the United States, fathers from the United States, from Canada, you name it, we've had them on, and it just boggles the mind on how the Japanese government can basically get away with this and how parents are basically taking a free pass to Japan knowing that the other parent can't do a darn thing about it. Tell us about your case.
Yes, well, I was married. I was married for 11 years, and after my daughter was born, the marriage started deteriorating, and, I separated. And during my separation, I filed for divorce, and I met my current fiancé. And in the beginning, she said she wasn't going to take my daughter away, and then I guess she decided, she felt like she didn't have any support system here, so she wanted to go. So that's where go to Japan, and that's where I stand right now, is in this fight of my life to keep a relationship with my daughter.
This whole I call it a quagmire of court. Some fathers are hiring private investigators, basically bankrupting themselves so they can try and fight for what's rightfully theirs anyway. Can you talk about the case itself? And has your local authorities or the United States authorities helped you at all in preventing this from happening?
Nothing now. It just seems you know, now it's becoming more public. You know, a lot of my the Associated Press released the story, and it went throughout.
Are you still there, Ron?
England. Mm-hmm. But until then, I've had nothing, and I've been doing this on my own with my lawyers, basically, and that's it, you know, and just trying to go by their advice and going through the judicial system the way you're supposed to go through. So as of now, nothing with the authorities of the United States government, no.
If you feel comfortable, share with us a little bit about your relationship with your daughter and tell us a little bit about your daughter, because I think that's important.
Oh, absolutely. And that's really, you know, I love my daughter to death. I've been portrayed as abandoning her. And, you know, ever since I've been separated, I've had a relationship with her. And, you know, I've been with my current fiance for about 4 years. And, you know, I have a child with her now who is my daughter's half-brother, and he's just turning 2 July 1st, and they have this bond that's incredible. We all have this bond. My whole extended family now, she also has I have a future stepson, and they all have sibling bonds that were really played down in the courts. They didn't even mention hardly my future stepson and my son, who is my daughter's half-brother. I have a normal relationship with my daughter, like any father would, you know, under the circumstances of divorce, you know, and, you know, she's my baby, and I don't want to lose her, and that's what I'm fighting for.
Yeah, how important is that? Well, I'll tell you, when it comes to your children, if you can't fight for them, I don't know who you can fight for. The laws in Japan are... You know, if I had hair, the amount of times I would scratch my head thinking about the laws in Japan, I'd be a bald man for sure right now. It's totally bizarre, totally unfair, totally corrupt, and I'm using that term, you're not. Tell us about your thoughts on these laws and how it will basically rip your family apart.
Oh, if my daughter is allowed to relocate to Japan, I have no remedy. And I do fear that. I mean, the laws are just beyond bizarre. I mean, I've just found out in the last couple of days that if, say, the mother gets custody of the children and the father, and she refuses for the father to have visitation, if he decides in turn that he will abduct the children and take off somewhere and go into hiding, the Japanese authorities do not even go after the father, even though the mother was granted was granted custody. I mean, it's beyond bizarre to me. I can't understand it.
You know, in some of the other interviews I've done in the past, a lot of the parents have talked about how the government, how the federal government, the United States, Canada, or whatever, has let them down because they seem more interested in developing Japanese relations as far as a trading partner goes, and they're not really too concerned about these children that have been abducted there. Could you share our thoughts?
Yeah, it's from what I see, it seems to be, you know, they seem to be right. It seems like every outside group that I've tried to turn to, you know, like government or you know, along that line, or child welfare and stuff, I just hit a dead end. And I haven't gone to any federal level, and that's where really the laws need to be changed, because the state level just doesn't have enough power. But I do agree with them that, you know, it's the few people, as they might see it, that suffer because of this issue really doesn't outweigh, you know, the relationship on a business level, you know, with Japan, if I'm getting, you know, my point across.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and again, there is no comparison as far as I'm concerned. You said that you handled the case. I know there's some parts of the case you can't talk about, but you handled the case basically on your own. Do you have an attorney or private investigator or anyone helping you with this?
Oh, yes, I have a great attorney. Her name is Michelle Donofrio, and she has an associate, Krista Haley, and they're with the DeFrancesco firm. And they are so such wonderful lawyers. I mean, they're dedicated and loyal to my cause, and without them, I wouldn't have gotten as far as I have gone. And they're willing to take it to the Supreme Court. I mean, they're dumbfounded with, you know, with what's going on so far in my case, and they want to see justice served, and they're just so dedicated. They just, you know, and there's other people the Children's Network, the Children's Rights Network of Japan, who's really been, you know, helping me and giving me advice also on the outside. They actually even put up a web page for me, and it's at www.crnjapan.com/McKinnon case, and you can get all the information, public information about my case. Even the New Jersey has a webcast of the New Jersey Supreme Court hearing where my attorney argues my side, and my ex-wife's attorney argues her side. That's also, you know, on that website.
What's next for you, Ron?
The next thing that is the next hurdle is that I have a stay with New Jersey Supreme Court that, you know, has to be, will be up in 14 days, not from now, about 7, 8, 9 more days, and it'll be up. And we have to petition the Supreme Court of the United States for a stay to continue to hold my ex-wife and my daughter here in the United States. And that's the next hurdle we have to jump. We have another 9 days before they're allowed to leave if we don't have a Supreme Court justice sign off on the stay. So that's my concern right now. And then the next step will be this, you know, petitioning the Supreme Court of the United States.
Are you in regular contact with your daughter now?
Yes, I just dropped her off about an hour and a half ago back to her mom's.
Yeah, so she's still in the same community. Is there any sort of communication between you and your wife, or is that strictly between lawyers?
We speak about my daughter and, you know, that stuff. But as far as in communication about the case or anything, no, that's between the lawyers, yes.
If you had a parent who came to you now that you're knee-deep involved in this and asked you for advice, and again, this is a question that maybe is a bit unfair to you, sir, but this seems to be happening more and more. What sort of advice would you give to that parent as far as how to protect your child legally when it comes to separation, a divorce, whatever, especially when it comes to Japanese and Japanese ancestry and the possibility that they may be going back there?
First of all, I would one thing that, you know, that a lot of us as the parents that married Japanese people is to just keep the citizenship in the United States if that's possible, and not have a dual citizenship like my daughter has. Mm-hmm. That had a lot of weight on my case, and that I know has hurt me. As far as in anything else, it's pretty difficult. It really is. If they were to take off and just touch Japanese soil, that parent, the left behind parent, is basically finished.
And again, it's kind of a dopey question on my part, but it's a question that we need to ask. You know, it's not so generalized as far as how do you feel, but, you know, there's birthdays and Father's Days and Christmases and all that sort of stuff that comes up. How difficult is it for you as a parent knowing that you may not see your daughter again?
It is very difficult because the decision came down June 11th that she was allowed to relocate. And the only saving grace for me for Father's Day was that I was granted a stay. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is a horrible Father's Day. It's, you know, I'm losing her even before Father's Day. But it kills me because I have, you know, she has an extended family with her half-brother and step-brother, and all of us interact as a family unit, that it just, I can't even imagine how it would be without her there, because she's just part of the family, and to rip a family apart is just, I can't fathom that loss. I really can't.
Well, Ron, I thank you for spending some time with me this evening, and wish you all the best, and let's stay in contact, and hopefully we can update my audience at a later time with some good news.
Thank you so very much.
Take care, my friend.
Good night.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll be right back here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network with Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. Listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name is Dana Pretzer. Our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. Or we're on channel 46, Trust Cable in Alabama, or satellite virtual channel W3957 in beautiful DigiCypher 2 audio, or wherever else you can pick us up. Having a little bit of a problem getting a hold of Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch, but we'll take another quick break and we'll return quickly with Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch here on the Dana Pretzer Show.
The United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the world. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Well, who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did, that's who. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy, were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. I'm sure Tim Miller is very busy in Canton, Ohio right now, and if we can make contact with him, we'll bring him on the air. Again, Attorney J. Paul Derrotani will be here to give us an update on the Duckett case at the top of the hour. So we've got a few minutes right now, and if you would like to share your thoughts with me about anything this evening, you can call 1-306-842-7884, 1-306-842-7884. What do you think of this? I always get the name of the show mixed up, and in fact, it'll be on. Is it on at the top of the hour, or am I mixed up here? Let's see. This show will be on at 10 Eastern. Is it 10 Eastern? Yeah, 10 p.m. Eastern, called Haunting Evidence. Now, I think I've seen a show or two. There's a YouTube promo at scaredmonkeys.com with a guy, looks like me when I'm working nights, about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I get a call to have to go pick up a drunk somewhere. That's how my eyes go. They kind of roll back in my head. I'm not sure if I'm into this, you know, eyes roll back into your head and you get a feeling, but you know what? I really don't give a damn what it takes to get some answers and to find this little girl in this island, well, it's not paradise, but this island dungeon called Aruba. So if that guy that's rolling his eyes back in his head there, or whoever, or the amazing Mumford can come on and find somebody, then good for them. Me, I'm a bit of a skeptic. I have to see it to believe it. But again, Haunting Evidence, 10 p.m. Eastern time on Court TV. And I'm sure because it's on Court TV, it'll be reran several times. And if you want more information, you can go to scaredmonkeys.com and you'll see the Court TV little promo for it. And I think they ask a good question here at Scared Monkeys, saying, "We need evidence and leads, not just haunting evidence." So there's probably a little bit of hype involved. We understand that. There's ratings. There's all those sorts of things. And some people like this spooky, weird kind of stuff. The psychics. And I've had psychics. Remember my psychic that called in from Bombay, Michigan? Yeah. Bombay, Michigan. I'm going to take a break and we'll be back. I'm going to try Tim Miller again here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4! We got to patch it up, baby, before we fall apart at the seams. We got to patch it up, baby, we came that time to unravel our dream. Let's go back and touch the repair. One more night is all I ask. Get that feeling. Try with that feeling, that old feeling.
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. If you remember back to the Nancy Grace episode where she basically went nuts and started to interrogate Melinda Duckett on air, and then subsequently the sad report that Melinda Duckett had taken her own life, there was a lawsuit filed against Nancy Grace and CNN, and I've had Duckett family attorney J. Paul Dertani on the air many times, and I see that there's an update on the case, and I thought I would bring him back. Counselor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Dana.
What's going on? I see that there's some news. We haven't heard a lot of this. It's been nonstop Paris on the cable news channels, but I think the Duckett case is much more important than that.
Yeah, well, you know, with court, sometimes things take a long time, and for some reason this decision has taken a bit of time. Of course, the federal judge did have a lot to consider. Basically, the issue is whether or not this case should go to state court or federal court,
right,
and whether or not Joshua, the father, should be a named party. And the court ruled that this is going to proceed in federal court pursuant to the removal statute, and that Joshua Duckett is not going to be a named defendant.
Okay.
And the reason is because he did not set up the trust. As you know, we had filed allegations indicating that Nancy Grace and Joshua had worked together on raising funds, and we wanted to have an accounting of those funds, but we have to rename the party who is actually the trustee. So it gets into some technical terms, but we have some work to do, but basically it means we're going to forge ahead in federal court.
Okay, and that's good, because we haven't heard much of this case in the media for some time now, and it's nice to get an update. How about the investigation itself? Last I had you on, there were some leads, but then basically it's become quiet.
Yeah, it's very sad, and I hope that at least with this coming back into the media, that there is, you know, perhaps some renewed interest on the part of not only the police officials but upon the general public itself, because you hear so much about other missing kids, and it seems like Trenton has sort of gotten on the back burner, but he's still missing, and there's been very little leads. The law enforcement's kept pretty quiet, as I suppose they should. I got to say that the sheriff's department has done a very good job at keeping up with us and following any leads. Sometimes people have emailed me or my co-counsel and brought up issues. We bring them out to the sheriff's, or we send them on to the sheriff's department right away. They follow through, and they've been diligent about that, but you know, we haven't heard any news. We haven't heard any news as to where Trenton is. There's been hints in the past, but right now seems to be turning up cold.
Has this case, now that it's going to proceed, brought a new attention to those in the media, those that conduct interviews, and calmed them down a little bit? And that's my term?
Well, look at what's happened recently. Look what Nancy Grace had excoriated those Duke players,
right,
back in, it was last year, I forget the time frame of when she was basically presuming that they were guilty, and now she's never said she was sorry for that, and she's gone forward, and now she's on the bandwagon against Nifong.
Right.
Whether or not he's right or wrong, and certainly there's a duty to report, and there's an obligation to try to find the information, but it's so unfortunate that some of these, either the producers of the shows or the newscasters themselves, or supposed newscasters like Nancy Grace, they don't do the fact checking, they don't bother to find out information, they simply go on sensationalism, and she's purely a sensationalistic broadcaster.
Investigative reporting should just be that, keyword investigative.
There's no investigation in what she does.
We don't see a
lot
of that.
She's pumped up, and she gets them riled up without a cause. And so often she's been wrong, and you see it time and time again. She did that in the Elizabeth Smart case
right,
a couple of years ago, where she blamed the wrong individual for basically blamed them through intimation and statements that she made. And she does this time and time again, and hopefully it's going to stop. But you know, I'm not sure one lawsuit can do it.
Well, it's interesting to see that you are forging ahead. And, Counselor, you're welcome on my program anytime.
Well, thank you, Dana.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's J. Paul Derrotani with an update on the Nancy Grace lawsuit. We'll be right back.
I said, come on, baby, a whole lot of shaking going on. Shaking going on. Yeah, we ain't faking. A whole lot of shaking going on. I said, come on over, baby. We got chickens in the barn. There's more, one more, my barn. Come on over, baby. We got the bull by the horn. Yeah, we ain't faking. A whole lot of shaking going on. Yeah. I said, shake, baby, shake. I said, shake, baby, shake now. I said, shake, baby, shake. I said, shake, baby, shake. We ain't faking. A whole lot of shaking going on. Yeah. I said, come on over, baby. A whole lot of shaking going on. I said, come on over, baby. A whole lot of shaking going on. Yeah. We ain't faking. A whole lot of shaking going on. With my. I said, shake, baby, shake. I said, shake, baby, shake now. I said, shake, baby, shake, all right. I said, shake, baby, shake. We ain't faking. A whole lot of shaking going on.
Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed the show this evening. I can't get a hold of Tim Miller, but he is very busy searching for Jesse Davis down in Canton, Ohio. I appreciate that, and I wish them and the him and all the folks at Texas Equisearch and all the searchers the best of luck there. Stay tuned to your cable news channels for more information on that case. My name is Dana Pretzer. Special thanks to all my guests this evening, and we'll be back with you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.